I am all in.
With Scott Patterson, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Hey, everybody. Scott Patterson. This is I Am All In podcast. We're very excited. This is our first episode, and we have a big gun coming in to talk to us right away, right off the bat. We're giving you the big people. It's Yannick Truesdale, ladies and gentlemen.
Bonjour.
That's it. Bonjour. Yannick, you're looking fantastic.
Well, look at you. All the plastic surgery. It does.
I haven't done that yet. I think I'm
kidding.
Well, let's talk after, all right? Because it's like, yeah. I'm in real need. Are you in Australia?
I'm in Australia. It's 9 a.m. for me. I woke up early just for you. You're
our first guest.
Oh, really?
You're the first guest. You're the first guy I wanted on. I said,
so what's the occasion, or what's, like, I know very little. I just said yes, and here I am.
But hear my name. It's a yes. You don't even have to ask, right?
Yeah. Right. So what's going on?
This is a podcast for iHeart. So,
and
I'm having, you know, everybody that wants to come on the show, just sort of, you know, banter with me and take a walk down memory lane.
That's your first podcast ever?
Ever.
Today.
I've never done a podcast before.
Wow, that's so funny.
Where would I was a guest on a podcast about a year and a half ago. The producer and I hit it off. And then, I don't know, about 9 months ago, I called her and said, what about this idea? And she goes, sure, let's do it. It was as simple as that.
Good for you.
And I said, I'm not doing it unless Truesdale is the first guest right out of the gate.
Yes, well, there you go.
And
you
a recurring guest. And I fought for you, and I won. There you are.
How are you?
I'm great. We're moving into our new place tomorrow, so we're a little in flux for the last couple of months as the house is remodeled. And, you know, I sold the old place.
Where is that, may I ask?
It's a little closer to the beach, let's just say.
Okay.
That. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I'm like,
you don't want to give your address? What's the address?
It's 123 Primrose Lane, any town, America, USA. 10000. So
that's exciting. I like the beach. That's one part that I enjoy being here a lot, is that the house is right on the beach. That's a life changing.
Isn't it great? Isn't that great?
Oh my God. For me, the ocean is everything. Yeah. It's calm. Like, I regroup.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's a ton of questions, okay? There's a ton of questions. Okay. Fans want to know. This is, you know, I want to do this for the fans. You know, they're getting hung out to dry a little bit. And we should be doing more episodes, and we're not. And everybody's, you know, you're turning into this international superstar, never available. You know,
someone's got to do it. Melissa took all the room. I'm
trying to So I want to know, and the fans want to know, how'd you get the part? Tell us how you got the part. What was the process?
Oh, Michelle?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Well, I had moved to L.A. 10 months prior, something like that. Because I wanted to work in America, because my career was all in Canada, and I felt like I had done it. And a friend of mine had a date with an assistant at CAA, and she didn't want to go by herself.
Mm. Can't blame her.
CAA. And it was a lunch date. Right.
Better wear a hockey suit.
So I was like, I can't go. It's a date. She's like, no, it's not a date. Just come. Anyway, I was so embarrassed to be there and be in the way that I was trying to be funny and entertaining during that lunch. Well, little did I know that this assistant became an agent 6 months later and did find me funny and had seen the breakdown for Gilmore and Michelle. I didn't have an agent. He called and he said, I saw this part and I thought of you. Do you have an agent? Like, I was like, yeah, that would be my first audition in L.A. Yes,
really?
Please, can I? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a great. Were you nervous when you went in? Were you a little bit nervous? I mean, you're a real professional. I mean, you're really a trained theater actor. Do you get nervous?
I don't really get nervous when I'm prepared.
Right.
If exactly. I'm nervous, it's because I got the script last minute and like I don't know the words.
Yeah.
But if I'm prepared and I know the lines and stuff, so I was not nervous. I was excited because I was my first audition in LA.
Right. Right.
But yeah. So and then I had like I don't know gazillion callbacks. It took a while.
Really? Oh, that's because it was written as a series regular part.
It was a series regular. Yeah. No one knew me.
Yeah.
And so I had to go back for Amy. I had to go back for producer. I had to go back for studio and then network. So
right. So let's talk about when you read the script initially. What were your initial thoughts on Michelle?
I don't think I had the script.
Wow.
I think I had few scenes.
Couple of sides. Right.
A couple of sides.
And you were lucky if they spelled your name right and wasn't right. Rochelle or Dishell, yeah. You know, because they did that to me. It was Luke and then Duke. And I said, I didn't prepare the Duke.
Oh, really? Oh, my God.
They gave me two scenes, but one said Luke, the other said Duke. So they said, naturally I thought, well, maybe that's a typo, but I didn't prepare it because I had three auditions that day. And they said, well, go out and learn it, come back. And I said, okay, thanks a lot for that.
But was your part originally not a series regular?
It was a guest star role on the pilot. But it began with the diner and ended with the diner. So we figured it was just a heat check anyway, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah. It was a chemistry check. Because you know how they reshoot stuff all the time.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, and I'm still a peon, but it was still a small, tiny, nothing peon back then. They could have just like recast, like, get out of here. Go away.
They do that, but they didn't because the magic was there.
The magic was there, right? Yeah. So was it easy to perfect that accent knowing that you're from Quebec? Was that character from Quebec? Where was he from?
Character was from Parisian, was French, and the accent is different from a French Canadian accent.
Right.
But because that accent is so familiar to me,
right?
I didn't have to spend much time on that.
You just nailed that so huge. It was just you have this way of forcing people, and I hate you for it, but I love you for it, right? Of hanging on every single word with that accent, that mellifluous, that rolling. And it still has a bite to it. So do you consider Michelle to be rude or just honest?
I think honest, but in a context of a different culture, you know, because Michelle in Paris is not rude.
Right.
They're all like him.
Right, right,
but
right.
You put him in the context of in America.
Yeah.
That he is rude because people don't speak their mind.
Right, 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 right. No,
when they do, it's because they're being rude. And the French love to have an argument.
Right,
but you would think they're fighting, but it's just they love the conversation and the banter and arguing about a subject and just taking on purpose the opposite side.
Absolutely.
Of it.
Right.
Just, like dissect.
I mean, you just can't sit there and eat the dinner. You know, you gotta have fun.
Yeah.
You gotta get to know people.
So yeah, I don't think he is rude. No.
Right. Okay. All right. Yeah. So here's a little bit of a personal question. Do you think people think that you are prickly in real life?
Yes, they do.
They
think because when you do something well in this business, as you know, people think you are that person.
Right.
So they're always, first of all, shocked that when I open my mouth, when they've never seen me in anything else, that I don't speak like Michelle. It's like, well, no, this is the character. I'm not. And then they're like, oh, you're so nice. You're so sweet. I was afraid to say hi to you.
Don't be
afraid. I'm not going to bite you. So there's a little bit of that perception that you are that character, but quickly they realize how charming I am.
It's overwhelming.
Yes.
It's overwhelming. Well, that's why I fought so hard for you to be the debut guest on the debut podcast. Because, you know, they wanted Tom Cruise, and I said, no.
Yes.
No, 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 no. No, it's got to be unique.
Tom called me this morning.
Or I walk. He was upset. He's still upset.
He's a little upset, but that's okay.
I mean, listen, I killed my chances of ever being in like Mission Impossible 17 or 18 or 19 or anything. There's no way. I'm out. Right.
No, yeah. No. I'll throw a good word for you.
Yeah. So he called me this morning and said, I'm removing the panic button from your fireplace. What do you think is the, what's your favorite Michelle line? Do you have a favorite? Do you even remember?
Because
it's so long ago, I can't remember.
We had so many. So many.
20 per episode, I know.
Yeah, so it's really hard to pick. There's one that has stuck over the years that people keep mentioning. So it's the one from the pilot. People ask Patrick Kedeli, stupid today. I can't talk to any more of them. But I still like very much that line from, I can't remember which episode, when there was an elderly lady at the inn and she came to the front desk and said, excuse me, sir, do you know where I can find the best antiques? And Michelle's answer was, at your house, I guess. I just thought that was spot on. I like that line a lot.
That's a good line.
Yeah.
Let's listen, we cannot not talk about Lauren Graham.
Yeah, of course.
I just watched the pilot and I haven't seen the pilot in a long time. I was stunned at how great she is and how
she was fantastic.
Nuanced and so funny and so effortless and just wow. And you
layered.
Guys, yes, absolutely. Even the pauses and everything. I mean, it was just working on a level that few can. And the two of you together it was just perfection. So let me ask you, on a personal side, did the chemistry between you and Lauren, was it immediate or did it grow over time?
I would say immediate. Right. But we became friends. So I am sure that the personal friendship that we had outside informed the work over the years. But but we immediately liked each other and immediately went for a coffee, I think, when we came back from. So there was an instant like, oh, I like you. Who are you? Oh, I like you. Who are
you? Right, right, right.
And it never went away. So
good.
Yeah.
Good. And Melissa, you remain friends with Melissa. What's it like working with her?
Well, obviously I'm here in Australia doing a show with her now.
Right.
We've remained friends all of these years, but, you know, she is now kind of a big actress, so I don't get to see her as much as I used to. So that's the blessing of doing this job together, this Netflix show,
right.
is that we can hang out and see each other and go to dinner and all of that. So that's been fun to reconnect and enjoy each other's company.
Well, give her my best. Tell her I said hello. So listen, Michelle's favorite singer on the show is Celine Dion. How do you personally, Yannick, how do you feel about Celine Dion?
I mean, I've always been impressed by the talent, the voice, and the dedication to. I mean, you guys don't know this, but you know, we've known Celine since she was 14 or 13 or whatever age she was, and at a very, very young age, she said on TV, and everyone laughed and. She looked a little weird and she had bad teeth. She said she wanted to be as famous as Michael Jackson. Huh. And she said, she said that like she was not even 20. She was like 18.
Wow.
So, you know, and I appreciate someone's dedication to their dream.
Yeah.
And she remained focused and she wanted that. And she got it somehow. I mean, she was never Michael Jackson. No one can be Michael Jackson, but it's an image and she's definitely, you know, she's worldwide famous and known and has this huge career.
I think that level of fame and talent, I think that just doesn't happen. Rarely does it happen. I mean, it happens,
but
you have to want it. I mean, you have to want it very badly.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you'll put the work in and you'll... You know, there's no plan B. There's no fallback plan. It's just like, this is what I am. This is what I...
that relationship with her manager that became her husband and all that. I just find the whole thing fascinating.
Yep.
He mortgaged his house to finance her first album and the whole thing.
Right.
It's just something magical in this whole story.
Yeah.
In some ways, I don't buy her albums and stuff. It's not my kind of music, but I do admire the talent.
Good. Excellent. Yeah. I took a few things from the set. I borrowed them. I just wanted to make sure they were going to be well looked at.
Yeah, of course.
What about you? What did you borrow, and what are you overseeing? What are you looking after?
Well, I mean, maybe they have put in storage at my house. A few of the suits, maybe. I'm not sure. I would have to look into this.
You're gonna have to look on the bill of lading to see.
Yeah,
it may be some one or a tie. Probably
maybe a tie.
Could be a belt. Who knows?
Yeah. Who knows?
Hey, that's good enough for me, pal. Huh? there were seven of us who were in all the episodes, all 154. What was your favorite moment?
Moment.
Yes.
Not episode.
Moment. No, moment filming. What was your favorite moment? I know what mine was.
You do?
Yeah, but you go first.
Huh. I mean, it's so hard. There's an episode that was one of the most fun episodes for me, was the episode when Michelle went to LA and to the Price is Right and he got Botox and veneers and all of that. It was just a lot had happened to him and it was layered in the story, how he was. That episode tickled me. And I remember at the table read, like, people laugh a lot at the stuff he had
mm-hmm.
to do in the episode.
Right.
So I think filming that episode would be the highlight.
Because you got out of your box a little bit and it was fun.
Yeah.
And there
were more things happening mm-hmm. to him in
right.
that episode.
Right.
A little bit like when he lost his dog, something was happening. Because otherwise Michelle was always like in and out commenting on what was happening, but rarely something happened to him.
Right, right.
So what was yours?
You know, it's odd because people, you know, give me a little grief when I tell them because of all, you know, I said, all the people you get to work with and all those great moments you had with Lauren and all the characters. I said, yeah, but that was common. I said, the thing that I never got to do was to do action And all it took was a wall and a sledgehammer and smashing a hole in the wall and telling Jess, this is your room now. And we can, you know, I had a couple of lines. Yeah. I forget what that. Yeah, but I got to do something physical.
And you love that.
And I just thought, wow, this is the first time in, you know, all these years that I got to do anything like this.
I know. Yeah, oh, that's interesting.
So and walking through those bikers that, you know, the bicycle racers through the thing, which I didn't receive stunt pay for, and I could have been injured because they were flying around. They were going very fast, and I had to walk right through them and not look at them. At an angle. Right. Oh, they were. Oh, yeah. You weren't there that day, but they were zipping, you know, the bike race thing.
Yeah.
They were real racers with really fast bikes. My God. And I did it again and again and again, never got hit. And I was.
Stunts are interesting. I'm discovering that I have to do a lot of stunts in the show I'm shooting here in Australia because I play an angel. So I have to do a lot of flying in the air, and I flew out of a car the other day and all kinds of stuff, and I have a big battle fight that I'm training for, and it's all new to me, but I love physical stuff. It's very it's very exciting and gratifying. Blue screen. I've never done blue screen stuff,
right?
You know, where you really have to use your imagination to create something that is not there.
Right.
It's a part of
the acting brain. I agree. I love to use it more. That's why I enjoyed that moment so much, because it wasn't like, okay, chunks of dialogue, chunks of blocking, chunks of dialogue. Here we go again. Now it's just like, okay, hit the wall. All right. Okay. So we talked about, so it's called God's Favorite Idiot.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about the premise. I mean, you told us a little bit, but what's happening?
Yeah, so it's basically Melissa McCarthy and Ben Falcone. Ben wrote it. It's Leslie Bibb and Kevin Dunn and myself. And it's basically God has chosen this really simple guy who works in a tech company, who's played by Ben Falcone, to save the world. Nothing more, nothing less.
He would be my first choice too. I mean,
yeah. And he doesn't understand why he's chosen, because right. he's like, me? Why? What am I supposed to do? And so God sends an angel, an archangel, Shamuel, who is me, to kind of guide him into the mission.
Gotcha.
Of saving the world.
Gotcha.
So that's basically the very silly premise, and it's a lot of fun.
And it's a movie or is it a series?
No, it's a series, 8 episodes. Ah. We're shooting 2 seasons.
Wow.
Back, yeah.
Wow.
So 16 episodes total.
Yeah. Oh, Vince, good for you. That's a Thank fantastic you. Gig. So you're going to do them all down there?
Yes, we're here until August. I've been here since February.
Unbelievable. That's an eight-month job.
Eight-month job. And by the way, in a country that has handled the pandemic amazingly, there's no COVID around. We don't wear masks here. We don't do distanciation. We don't do it. Like, there's no cases.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that really is God sent.
Yeah.
Really,
I went down to the beach today and didn't wear a mask, and I was almost arrested.
I
got some dirty looks from the police, and I just said, hi, have a nice day.
you're in a different country, a different situation.
I forgot it. You know, I go down there and ride the bike and, you know, run a little bit, and I forgot it today. Boy, that raised some hackles, let me tell you something. Yes. You know what? How many times did you and I have scenes together?
Not that many. I do remember that time where you came to the front desk and you wanted to see Lorelai, and I was giving you grief.
Right. Yes.
I remember that scene, and another scene where I wanted you to fix something in the end, or maybe it's the same episode. I don't know. But
there were lines back and forth, but not many.
Not many, very few. Jesus. Very few. Like with Ed Herman, I think I had one scene in the whole thing.
Right. Isn't it amazing the two most talented guys in the history of Hollywood, and they don't match us together? It's isn't it bizarre? Isn't it weird?
Where are you going with this?
So was I actually.
Amy could have sent me to your diner a couple of times. I don't know.
Yeah,
don't
right?
Know.
Right?
We never crossed paths. Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't the guy to sort of like leave notes for her. With ideas, right?
No.
Because I saw what happened to people that did, and they were, you know, it was like the floor went out from under them, and they fell under the shark pool. I think people have tried to do that.
Yeah, no.
We had an extra come in. He had one line, and he started doing a soliloquy in rehearsal, and we're like, guy, let's just wind it down now and have a little chat. That's not going to work here.
Oh my God, no.
I know you think this is your moment and you're going to take advantage of it. Good for you. Don't lose that mentality, but not here.
Yeah, no, that was not the show for that.
No. And let me ask you this, and this is not from an egotistical point of view. I have to ask this question. It's just out of curiosity. How did you feel about the character of Luke?
How did I feel? I mean, you mean Michelle? How did he feel about you?
I think let's go with both you and Michelle. Yannick, feel about
him? Well, Michelle didn't care about you, clearly. You're like, you couldn't have been more remote from anything he liked or cared about. That's for sure. Yannick thought that it was a great character that you developed and made him very daring, and you know he was just a good guy. You just impersonated this good, manly, good-hearted. But that's how I perceived that character.
Right.
It's just like the guy that works at this place, and you go and his good heart. He comes from a good place and means well, does his best. You know,
right. Does what he can do. Guy that is never going to leave that town.
Right. He's never going to, it's not even in the, like, he right. doesn't, it's not like, even in the
car. Forget it. No.
Yeah.
And he sees her, and it's like, now, you know, any thoughts of leaving are like, no.
No.
No, I'm staying. Yeah. I'm gonna fight it. I'm gonna wait. I'm gonna be worth it.
I've always said that in my next life, I would like to be reincarnated in someone like that, who doesn't have really ambition, who's very easily satisfied, mm-hmm. who likes what they have going on, mm-hmm. and that's it, like a simple life.
Right, right.
I feel like it must be very peaceful.
I don't know. I don't see it in the cards for you. I think you're going to come back some kind of a king. I really do.
No,
yeah,
no,
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
No, I don't want it.
No, you're going to have it. You're going to have it. No. You're going to have it.
I think that's done. That wasn't
No. You screwed up. You were assassinated a few times. No, you're coming back. You're going to do it right. You're going to do it right this time. And you will
all
be
right,
you will be revered. Okay.
All right.
All right, here's, and listen. I'm not going to take this personally because I think I already know the answer. Who is your favorite character to work with?
To work with? Well, it's easy to pick because they're the only two that I worked with. Really, yeah.
Years. Right.
It's Melissa and Lauren.
Right, right.
All of my scenes, mm-hmm. all of my scenes were with her. I did have scenes with Kelly Bishop from time to time, and I had a lot of fun playing with her.
Yeah. Yep.
She's still a friend to this day.
Mm-hmm. How's she doing?
She's doing okay.
Yeah.
She lost her husband
yes.
last year, and it's been challenging because she lost her husband and then the pandemic arrived.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
A lot of loneliness. But she's doing better. She's
good.
Doing better.
Good, 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 good. Yeah. So we hear that one of your guilty pleasures is The Bachelor. Did you watch it this season? What are your thoughts?
When did I say that? I mean, I think I watched it. I watched it one season years ago. I want to say like a decade ago, like mm-hmm. really long time mm-hmm. ago. I'm not sure how it happened, and I just got hooked on the characters that were there and the people, and then you get invested somehow. It's a really mm-hmm. weird, by the way, the same happened here when I did my quarantine in Australia, in Sydney, because you're stuck in a hotel room and I watch TV. Like
right.
And there's a show here called Married at First Sight. I don't know if it exists in America, which is the weirdest concept on earth. You marry someone you've never met.
Yeah,
and then you date.
Right.
And then literally the characters of those people are just questionable at best. And I just got invested. And I had to watch the last uh-huh. episode was Sunday. And I set my timer on my phone to not forget.
And it was that bad, huh? Yeah, the timer. Yeah, to use the timer.
It's just fascinating to watch human nature and pettiness and I don't know.
Yeah, it is. It truly is. It truly is.
Yeah.
You know, we have. You know, you're with the. We're going to do some conventions together once it opens back up. You know, we're the same agent.
I don't know. Oh, that's true. But
yes.
I haven't done that. So long.
I know. Well, no, nobody has, but I did a couple with Sean.
I had in the past too. I had. Yes.
I did one in Houston with Milo, and we did a panel together, and we did. It was just there's so it's you're gonna love this because you haven't done them before. Have you done them before? You have, right?
I've done a couple, but I haven't done them much. No.
You get to meet the fans. It's so much fun.
But you meet the fans every day on the streets. You know what I mean? So
yeah, but this is different. They're really coming to, and you can spend time with them.
You
can spend a couple of minutes with them, just talking to them and getting to know them, and it's fantastic. So it'll be fun to do that. So okay, you ready for rapid fire? I'm going to fire some questions at you.
Okay, sure.
You ready?
Yeah, go.
Okay, all right. How do you take your coffee?
Very rarely, quick coffee, really. It's tea. I'm drinking mainly green tea.
Can you smell snow? Can you smell snow?
Nope.
Okay. Are you team Logan, Jess, or Dean?
Dean.
Who's the daddy?
What does that mean?
Who's the daddy? Who's the daddy?
Logan.
Best memory of Gilmore Girls.
Sally Struthers and saying not finding, not having a chair to sit on outside, and it's like 45 degrees, and saying, "Don't they know who we were?"
You know, she's going to be on next week. Favorite Friday night dinner meal?
Oh boy, I'm too old to remember that.
Say burger and fries, milkshake. Show you're binge watching right now.
I just finished It's a Sin, a British show created by the guy who created Queer as Folk. Cried like a baby. It's about the AIDS crisis in London in the 80s. It's fantastic.
Okay. This is obvious. Cast member you texted most recently.
Melissa.
There you go. Boom. There you go.
About my chocolate cake that I brought them on Saturday and wanted to know if there was any left.
These are the important issues that people don't know about behind the scenes. Yes. See, we've lifted the curtain a little bit, and these are the issues. These are the this is the glue that holds these relationships together. I appreciate the time that you gave and waking up early to talk to us. And it's always great talking to you. It's great seeing you. Please come back. Please come back. We'll be calling on you again. Okay.
All right, sir.
So if you can wake up again, we would love to have you back on, because this was really fun.
Thanks for having me.
Give my best to Melissa and Ben. Have a great shoot.
Thank you, sir.
And all the best, my friend. Stay healthy, stay safe. Okay.
You too, Scott.
All right, buddy.
Nice seeing you. Talking to you.
Good seeing you, pal.
Bye.
All right. Bye bye.
All right. Yannick Truesdale, what a guy, what a talent, what a guest. He'll be back hopefully many, many times during this podcast. But we have another super guest, Grammy-winning singer-songwriter extraordinaire, Macy Gray. She'll come on later in the show, Macy Gray. So stay tuned. Hey, everybody. Scott Patterson. I Am All In podcast. We're back. Wasn't he great? Don't you just love Yannick Truesdale? I mean, my God, what a fun guy. Could talk to him all day. He's going to come back and talk to us some more. Okay, so now we're going to bring in Amy, our intrepid producer of the podcast, and she's going to fire off some questions and try to stump me. Good luck.
And we are all watching Gilmore Girls again, except for you. Who's watching it?
No, I'm going to experience, because I've never seen it. I'm going to experience it for the first time.
Is that true, Scott? Is that true?
It's true. Well, yeah. Here's the cliche: when you make the sausage, you don't want to eat it. So, I'll work on that. No pun intended. I'll try to make that line a little more appetizing, but. I didn't go home and watch it. I've only ever seen Winter because I was at the Netflix premiere I attended and I was forced to watch it.
Okay.
And I liked it. I was very impressed by it. And then I saw the pilot back in 2001 when it aired.
So you had not seen the pilot until today from 20 years ago.
Correct.
What did you think?
I watched it upstairs. We're in my wife's parents' condo because I bought a new house and we're not ready to go in the house yet. They're still doing some work. And I had to be upstairs. There's many levels to this place, but I had to watch it up in the den upstairs. And my wife is helping my son with the virtual schooling and going through that. And I was up there cracking up because I forgot how funny it was. And, Drella came on and said, "Get the heck out of my way." And I mean, it was just wonderful to watch it. And my wife kept shouting up, "Will you be quiet? We're trying to learn here." I said, "So am I." So, after 21 years, it was eye-opening. It really was. Wonderful show.
I have to say, it's a really good show. It holds up.
It is.
I've watched it a lot of times.
Yeah.
I mean, I've probably watched every episode maybe three or four five times, and I laugh and it holds up. It's really as good today as it was 20 years ago.
It's really just beautifully woven in with the comedy and the drama and how, I mean, it's just wonderfully acted. I mean, every single person that appears on the screen is just delivering, and it's wonderful to watch. Lauren's great. God. Boy, she's skilled. And Jared Padalecki had some great moments. And he was 18 at that time. He was 18 years old and he knew what he was doing as an actor, because those scenes are really great.
Will you take us back? How did you get the job?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, it was second audition of the day. I had three auditions that day. It was over on the west side of LA, and I lived on the West Hollywood side. So it was the second audition. I came in. It was a room full of guys. I'd prepared one scene. I'd read the script. You know, I took it seriously. I was a professional auditioner, and I was doing very well and getting, you know, to be the bridesmaid, and I knew I'd never get the job. But they'd say, oh, we love them, but it's not going to work out. So I went in with this kind of, like, the dumb courage of the truly burnt-out actor, where I just didn't care anymore because I was so busy. I was actually teaching acting. I had a ton of students. I had a ton of classes to teach. I had to get through these auditions and get to the theater and teach my class. So I just was in a rush. So I did the scene. I liked the people in the room. I met Amy. I met Gavin. I met Leslie Linka-Glatter. Great vibe. Casting.
Will you tell everybody who are, so for anyone who doesn't know, who are those people you just named?
Well, Amy Sherman-Palladino was the creator of the show, the series, with her husband, Dan Palladino. So Amy was in the room. I don't think Dan was there. I may be mistaken. They may correct me, which they're wont to do. And the director was there, Leslie Linka-Glatter, who is a much awarded television director and film director. Gavin Pallone, executive producer, was there as well. Casting, I forget who was casting, but I just came in for a guest star role. It wasn't a series regular job. So
oh,
it was
really?
Just like, yeah. Yeah, it wasn't to be. It was just like, go in, do the gig. Maybe you'll get it. You'll do a one.
And was
thing.
It Luke? Were you going yeah. in? Whoa. Yeah. So at that time, Luke was just sort of like a bit player.
Well, it bookended the script. Luke Steiner bookended the script. We begin the pilot there. We end the pilot there.
Right.
And then there's like a little middle thing, I think. But
you were like the third lead in the show. You know, anyone listening?
It became that.
Whoa, okay.
But that took, you know, a couple of years, you know, as the fans responded to that relationship, the potential of that relationship, which was, you know, on the screen, it was incendiary. It really
Wait, no way. Like, we're jumping around here. So when you booked this part, it was not to be like where it was Lauren, Alexis, you.
I think they had it, you know, they were doing a chemistry check. And I think had it not worked out, chemistry-wise with Lauren, they would have probably recast, or you know, they do that a lot with pilots.
Right.
But it worked.
Yeah, I found out. I read a book that Jared was not the original Dean.
Oh, really? But anyway, so I go in the room and I do the audition, and you know, I was nailing stuff all the time. It wasn't hard for me to audition well. I mean, these are, you know, I kind of know what I'm doing, and I walked in and I did my job, and I liked the people, but I didn't like them too much because you can't like them too much, right? You know, you got to flip the psychology somehow. And then I left, and they go, whoa, where are you going? You got another scene to do. I said, no, I don't. You sent one scene. They said, no, we sent two.
No.
And they showed me the sides, and I looked on my sides, and I said, wait a minute, who's Duke? Said, there's another character here. There's a Luke and a Duke. You want me to do the Duke scene too? Oh, that's a misprint. Sorry. So can you go out and learn the scene, come back and do it? Sure. 5 minutes later, come back in, do the scene. Can I go now, please? I have to go meet Carmen Electra. She's playing a fembot. I'm going to be her boss.
This isn't like a different... No way.
Charlie's Angels type movie, I think it was. And I was going to be like the... What do they call him? Boz? Was it Boz? Hey, Boz?
Yeah, Bosley.
He was the guy. Yeah, Bosley. The love interest. The love interest of the fembot. So, and the script was actually pretty good. So I was kind of excited to go to that one. And that was on the West Side. So that's what I did. And I left. And you know,
so I had no idea, like, this is going to change my life.
No idea. I never thought I had a chance because the script was so good. Actors and actresses were starting to move into TV in a big way at that point. And that's when the trend was really sort of picking up momentum in 2000. And I thought, this is too good. They're going to get movie people, and we don't have a chance. And By the time I got home, it was about 5 o'clock. There was a message on my answering machine. Remember answering machines? You push a button and you hear the message. And my manager said, you got the job. You got the gig. You're going, you know, you're going to fly to Toronto and 10 days or so or 2 weeks and do the job.
Yeah, I did read that they shot the pilot in Canada, but you knew Toronto. You were going to do the series if it went to series in Los Angeles.
It was a vote. It was kind of a vote. You know, they took a poll with the cast, and I don't think anybody really wanted to relocate to Toronto, even though it's a beautiful place. I mean, it's a really spectacular place, but people, you know, had families there and they just didn't want to uproot anything. And, you know, so Warner Brothers built the entire back lot of Warner Brothers. They just built it up to look like that Unionville and that beautiful place.
I know, I've been there. For anyone, people listening, it's pretty.
It's really
awesome
pretty there.
To
yeah,
go there.
It's really pretty. Yeah.
So when did you find out from the pilot? Okay, so tell us, you go and do, you shoot this pilot up in Canada,
right,
and that's when you meet Lauren
right.
for the first time?
So flew in, they lost my bags, went to the hotel in a tracksuit, and they said, they sympathized with me at check-in, and they said, some of your cast is waiting for you across the street, and there's this kind of five-star restaurant, French restaurant across the street. And I said, I can't go there in a tracksuit. And they said, sure you can. You're a big time person now. You're filming a show. Nobody cares. So I went over and they were very kind. The maitre d' was, we were expecting you and Lauren is here. And I met Lauren for the first time. And I was just like, wow, this is fantastic. She's a bit overwhelming when you meet her because there's a lot of beauty, a lot of intelligence
tall too?
Flying. Yeah, she's tall. So it's a striking figure. And she was just so kind and warm and welcoming, and we had a drink.
Did someone tell you to wear a hat backwards, or was that you?
I walked in that way. I walked into the audition that way because that's how I dressed. You know.
Yeah, you still
cash.
Do. Still wearing it.
I have a flowing locks and a real thick mane of hair. I like to cover it up sometimes.
So did you wear those plaid shirts too?
No, t-shirt. It's LA. I was wearing t-shirts.
So they were like, hey, put this flannel on. Keep that hat backwards. And this is what you're going to wear for the next 7 years.
And I was happy about it because, you know, now I don't have to go through the hair process and the makeup trailer at 5 a.m. It's like, just throw a little powder on my face. If you want, I'll throw a hat on. I'll be on set in 5 minutes.
Is Luke you? Are you Luke? Like, do you have similarities or not really?
Yeah, some. Yeah, I don't suffer fools. And you know, I can get a little impatient sometimes. But he's very, you know, the thing about that character, he was so tight. And look, reading the script, you're seeing all these happy, fluffy, wonderful colors coming out of all these characters.
Right.
And I thought, this thing is going to float away like a helium balloon if there isn't an anchor here. And I know that was part of Lauren's job as well. And Kelly had that job as well, as did Ed.
Yeah.
But I thought, in a love interest, in a town sense, it's got to be that guy. He's got to be that guy. He's got to anchor that show, or at least do his part to anchor that show and not give in to this rhythm. And this sort of, you know, this kind of elevated happiness and all of the stuff. And
right.
And so I just, that's the choice I made going into the audition. And hey, it could have failed. I could have fallen on my face with it. And they go, why is this guy being so grumpy? You know, what's with the attitude? But I thought, that's the only way that relationship is possibly going to be interesting or work.
I think they kind of describe him as cranky with a heart, or cranky but cares.
Yeah. Just don't show it. I mean, show it in actions, but not in, you know, sappy kind of smiles and like, oh, you know.
The thing about the pilot is you like these people right away. You like every single one of them.
Yeah.
Immediately.
They're real.
Yeah.
They're real people. You don't see television shows with so many varied personalities that are real, that are believable. You don't see that. And there's a ton of them. There's 30 of them in that town. I mean, there's so many characters, and they're all so distinctive.
There are so many characters, and you meet a good chunk of them in the pilot, and you kind of know them right away. Like, I think that was the magic, too. You sort of figure out who's who. Okay, so here's my question. Do they tell you, and we see this more in episode 2, so we'll talk more about this next week, But does someone tell you, you guys kind of like each other, or there's like a small hint of flirt, or there's like a little crush? Like, do you know that?
They don't tell you too much, but they give you a little, you know, they give you little nuggets. You know, Amy gave me a couple nuggets and it was like, yeah, I know how to play this. I'm not going to show very much at all until the very last.
You see, like, a glimmer in episode one, and next week we'll talk about it more, because in episode two, you see it. It's almost like foreshadowing, but I digress. Okay, so my other question to you is, how often do people call you Luke when you're like walking down the street?
Season two, going to work, I was on the Cahuenga Pass, going to Barham. There was a cab driver, a big guy, a car accident, and nobody was stopping to help him. So I pulled over to stop him. And that's pretty dangerous that early in the morning, a lot of traffic. And it was still kind of dark out. And I mean, he was 280 and he was unconscious and kind of coming to. And I got him out of his car and I was helping him to the side of the road. And somebody drove by, I don't know, 50 miles an hour, and they go, "That a boy, Luke."
Wait a minute. No. So that was like the first time. That was the first time.
No, it wasn't the first time, but it was the first. It was major. The oddest time.
And does it happen? To be recognized. Does it happen now? Does it happen now?
Yeah, everywhere I go. Yeah.
Like, people don't even say Scott. They say Luke.
If they say anything, they'll just say, you know, like, I like to go down to the beach and ride a bike. So I'll rent a bike, and they'll, you know, the people that work there will, you know, they'll rent me the bike. And then when I bring it back, they go, "By the way, we really love the show." You know, this kind of thing. And totally. It's like, it's always a nice little aside, right? It's
do
like,
they say, get off your cell phone?
No, they don't do that. Oh, you know, that's actually, you know, that actually has happened a couple times.
Obviously. Like, I mean, I would be spewing Gilmore lines at you, like, constantly.
There was a guy at the gym that yelled at me to get off my cell phone, and I know why he did it.
It's the best.
He had a smile. He had a smile on his face. I'm like, why is this guy yelling, and why is he smiling, and why is he bothering me?
Before we go to break, will someone tell us were we right? Who was the original Dean?
That was Nathan Wetherington. I mean, it's common knowledge. Come on, guys. Come on. Listen, we're going to go to a quick break. We'll be right back. You know, the Gilmore actors that played Lorelai's parents, Richard and Emily Gilmore, were some of the most recognizable actors. And Richard, of course, was played by Ed Herman, beautifully played by Ed Herman. And the same with Kelly Bishop, who played Emily Gilmore. I was so aware of Ed, and I remember filming that first scene with him on the golf course. I was like, I'm working with a legend today.
Well, and Kelly is the mom in Dirty Dancing. Yeah, like,
exactly.
Are you kidding me? Nobody puts baby in a corner. Like, she's like, you guys don't remember this? She goes, she gets that from me. And it's like, yeah, oh my God. That's like, she's a major from Dirty Dancing.
Yeah, they were definitely the senior members of the staff in that show.
And he was like,
Struthers, I mean,
yeah, like, he played FDR in like a couple things. He was sort of like he was, he had just had this great body of work.
Yep.
I mean, but nobody puts baby in a corner. Oh my God.
No. But Sally, you know, Sally, I grew up with Sally and watching All in the Family, that iconic show. And
so Sally Struthers will be on with us next week when she has her first appearance in episode two. So yeah, she was, that was pretty major that she was in there too.
You guys, we have to talk about Melissa McCarthy in this pilot episode. I'm watching it for the first time with you, Scott, and I am so shook that she was in the first episode. And I obviously went to Google and found out that she's a regular throughout the series. But I'm like, this is massive. Like, Melissa McCarthy and Gilmore Girls. So cool.
Yeah. She's hysterically funny and a very, very gifted actress. You know, she was with, oh God, what's that comedy troupe?
Groundlings.
In LA. Groundlings. So she was a member of Groundlings. We all went to see her one evening. She did four or five different characters. She wrote all her material. We were laughing so hard our sides hurt. She's so good at that stuff, creating characters. And that scene was priceless, where she's just gonna set the whole place on fire and hit people with the pans and the whole, whoa, everybody's helping her out. So it just goes to show you how good a cook she was, right? To tolerate that.
She stays for the whole run of the show. She's there the whole time. Yeah.
Yeah. It wouldn't have been the same without her.
Yeah.
And I always thought it was like Suki got cast as a regular because Alex Borstein could not get out of her contract with Fox because she was doing that show with Fox. She was doing a sketch comedy show with Fox.
Mad TV. I think she was doing Mad TV. So Alex was the harp player Drella, but she was supposed to be Suki.
Right. She was supposed to be Suki. So they just eliminated the Drella thing, right? Or they created the Drella so that she could do the one-off and go back to Mad TV, right? And then they cast Suki. So at the time, you know, we knew how good Alex was nailing that role. And we were like, oh God, how are you going to replace that? And of course, you know, Melissa McCarthy happens and you're like, oh, that's how.
Well, and then Alex goes on to win the Emmy for Maisel with Amy Sherman-Palladino. So it's like, she must like her. She likes working with who she likes working with.
Yeah, they're very good friends. Yeah. They've been known each other a long time. And
she's so good on Mrs. Maisel.
Ugh, amazing.
Oh my God. Amazing.
Yeah.
In the pilot, you've got two big scenes in the beginning and at the end.
I have. Yeah. Well, basically, well, I wouldn't say they're big, but I think they're lines that I utter that live in the Gilmore sphere for eternity. Red meat can kill you in joy, which is the last thing I say. Or maybe not the last thing, but that little blurb before that little connection with the Oxford and no hat on and the little glimmer between Laurel and I, and then calling her an addict in the first scene. So,
and is that the scene where Rory says, are you my new daddy, to the guy flirting with?
That is the scene when the guy who has, he doesn't look like Milo, but he sort of sounds like Milo. He has the sort of same rhythms as Milo. I noticed watching today, thinking, boy, that kind of sounds and feels like Milo.
He's the one that's flirting with both of them.
Right. He hits on Lorelai and then he hits on Rory. And then Lorelai comes up and said, that's my daughter. And he goes, well, I have a friend. I'm traveling with a friend. I mean, creepy guy. He goes, she's 16. He goes, we'll be going. I think so. Drive safe.
I'm Riley and I'm reading the pop culture references. There was a lot of them in this first episode.
Oh,
so the first one was RuPaul. When Lorelai brings out her large makeup case and Rory says, God, RuPaul does not need this much makeup.
And, you know, when I was teaching acting, RuPaul was a student of mine.
No.
Yes, I did have a private session with RuPaul. A friend of mine said, would you help RuPaul with a film audition? And I said, sure, of course, it's what I do. And that's how I got started in the whole teaching acting thing, is doing privates for friends. And they said, you're really good at this. And I got a call back and I got the job and you should think about charging for this. And so I charged, you know, $20. I didn't want to charge very much. But then I got so many people, because people charge $150, $200 an hour. But it was a wonderful session and terrific actor. I was really surprised. I didn't know what to expect, but you know.
So this was in Luke's scene, actually, where Lorelai says, look, Officer Krupke.
Krupke.
Krupke. She's right at that table right there.
West Side Story.
Oh, none of us.
Officer Krupke.
That went over.
You know, they're all dancing around.
That went over the 20s, the 30s, and the 40s.
Yeah.
It sure did.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a bit over 40, just a bit. You know, just a drip over 40. So, yeah. Well, I grew up with West Side Story, so I know Officer Krupke.
Next, we have Rory was looking at her Chilton skirt, and she says, I'm going to be in a Britney Spears video.
Totally works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Works for me. Does that work for you, the young ones here?
Oh, absolutely.
It was a really funny line. I laughed out loud. That's when my wife said, will you keep it down up there? And I said, no, it's funny. I'm going to be in a Britney Spears video.
It does seem like a show with this many references of the time could seem so dated, or like the things could be so sort of like antiquated, if that's the right word, but none of that does not happen at all. I feel that these writers were geniuses.
You know, they hit it out of the park on this one. I mean, that's why I didn't think I would get it. I thought this is too good for me. Before we bring in Macy, Riley, give us the Macy Gray references in the pilot episode.
Yeah, so the first one, Lorelai says to Rory, "Well, you're crabby." And Rory says, "I'm sorry, I lost my Macy Gray CD. I need caffeine." Lorelai says, "Oh, I have your Macy Gray CD," and pulls the CD out of her purse. And then the next one, Macy Gray's "I Try" plays right after Lorelai and Rory's fight in Rory's room.
Knowledge. Amazing knowledge. What a great story she has. What a great story. You know, she had a very austere mother who was a math teacher and, you know, drummed this work ethic into her and getting great grades. And she didn't think she had a great voice at all. She was actually embarrassed to sing. And, you know, she's in L.A. kicking around and, you know, trying to make something happen. And she ends up meeting a guy and they did a demo. And then she started getting some gigs, and then one thing led to another. I mean, I think she got signed by Atlantic Records and they dropped her because the guy who signed her left, and then she went back home, and then she came back to LA a couple years later because another record guy, agent, whatever, got in touch with her and said, "Well, give it another shot. Come on back. Let's do it." And the rest is history.
No way.
And she's a good songwriter.
Yeah.
She's a good, because I, you know, I write songs too. I write a lot of songs. I've written 30 songs this winter and I've recorded 3 songs, and we're going to, you know, potentially hear some of these songs, but she's a really good songwriter and she's got a really unique voice, and, you know, she opens her mouth and you know that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Right.
Definitely.
So, and that is so rare. It's really rare. Where it sounds actually great, you want to listen to it, but she's very unique, and she just never realized it. And she had to be convinced that, you know, and all singers hate their voices. They hate them. Elton John hates his voice. Bono hates his voice. Everybody, every producer I've ever talked to has said, "I've worked with so-and-so and so-and-so. They hate their voices." So, you know, it's a common story.
How do you feel about yours?
I don't care for it.
Well, okay. So Macy Gray is coming up in like just a few minutes. Okay, Riley, what else?
I don't care for it. That's why I don't watch myself on these
shows.
I was
going to make a joke about the sausage, but then it just felt weird. It was like, how the sausage is made. It's like, I don't know. I guess 20 years later, does it get easier to watch it now?
Yeah. Yeah. Now I can, because I can enjoy it. I have time to sort of sit back and really appreciate it.
I mean, I don't want to be like flirty, but you look good. Like right from the start, I'm like, they're cute. Somebody I will out in this, one of the
I like to think it was my talent, definitely, but now I'm finding out, nah.
Somebody said, "I'm crushing on Scott watching this." Oh, Becky did it. Yeah.
Sure did. I was like, wait, young Scott is pretty darn cute.
Oh, man. Oh, stop.
I don't know how he feels about that. You just called him young Scott. But Riley, what else?
I know. Please refer to me as young Scott, please. Please. When referencing.
You're still young Scott. Forever
no,
young.
But that's okay. Open season on that. Go ahead.
Before Macy Gray gets here, Riley, what else was in the episode that was like pop culture?
So we have Rory and Lorelai were standing outside for their weekly dinner. And she says, "Do we go in or do we just stand here reenacting the little match girl?"
Oh yeah. I didn't get that.
I'm drawing a blank.
So I looked it up because I didn't get it either. I guess it's an old story about this little girl who would sell matches outside, but she would look through to see everybody warm while she was out in the cold.
But that's why people rewatch the show, because there's so many references and they look them up and then they watch them again.
Totally.
And enjoy them on a different level with knowledge. Yes.
So the last one I have is Dean sees Rory. She dropped everything and he mentions Rosemary's Baby.
Was this when she was talking about cake? Was this when she's like,
Ruth
before, yes.
Ruth Gordon with the Tannis. You're standing over me like Ruth Gordon with a Tannis root. He does Rosemary's Babies. And she's like, what? He's beautiful and he reads. Yeah. Or at least he watches movies. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a good moment for Dean. And then he had the Moby Dick line too.
Another literature. Right? Yeah. But I also like Amy loved the cake, the multiple mentions of cake, because she was so nervous talking to Dean.
They're round. They make them really round.
Yes.
Right.
And then ends with, well, the cake, you know.
We're also missing the Nick at Night mention, which personally, me being in my 30s, I loved, because that was a huge part of my childhood. Is it even around anymore?
I don't know. Nick, that's a good question. Is Nick at
Night
around?
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know.
Actually, I don't know. But I mean, I definitely got the reference. Yeah. They used to show like old timey things, right? Like I Dream of Jeannie or stuff like that.
Yeah, right. Licensing play.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Good for them. So ladies, what were your favorite lines from the episode?
My favorite was when Rory said, Chicago, Wendy, Oprah.
But it's how she said Oprah.
Exactly.
That little pause, and then she kind of swallowed the word. It was really good acting, and it really made it funny.
I'll go next. Mine was, Rory comes in, you're happy. Did you do something slutty? And Lorelai says, that not
was
that
mine.
Happy.
I picked the same one. I literally could not stop laughing after she said that. I'm like, that is so good. The fact that she's saying that to her mom, like, it's so good.
But what about if you're going to throw your life away, like, for God's sakes, make sure he has a motorcycle. I'm saying it wrong, though. Somebody give the exact quote. But what was that?
No, we know. Right. If you're going to throw your life away, at least make sure he has a motorcycle. Sure. My favorite line was in the diner to the creepy guy hitting on her. When he realized he wasn't going to get anywhere, he goes, well, I have to go. And she goes, so soon? He goes, what? He goes, just kidding. It's like, it says everything about that character. Like how on top of it she is, how detached she is, how silly she thought the whole thing was, and how much fun that you were going to have with that character just based on so soon.
You can really watch it two times in a row and hear something you missed.
Yeah.
Like, this is not a show that you can be typing emails or like going to the bathroom in the middle of.
No, you gotta, but that's exactly what happens with people. They come home, they turn it on, and they make dinner, they do their evening, and they just have it on.
Overall, what do you feel about the pilot now that you've seen it?
I am shocked that we didn't get nominated for anything.
I agree.
I'm shocked. It's so good.
Well, and I just learned no one really watched it. Like, Lauren was just doing an interview and you guys were up against Friends. So it wasn't like a huge ratings. Like,
well, it was the CW at that time. It wasn't the WB yet. It was the WB at the time. So it was a smaller net that they were casting out there it was like 3-4 million. And then I think we got up to about 6 million, maybe a little higher than that. But that's a fraction of what the big networks were getting on their hit shows. Like Friends was pulling in, 20?
Yeah, something crazy. So did you know you were always going to come back? Or did you have like 20 episodes order?
Who, me personally?
Both. I guess both.
Well, after I was done the pilot, you know, it was like, see ya, nice working with you. I had a drink with Lauren, drink with Keiko. I was like, nice working with you, bye-bye. And then they came back with an offer of 2 shows. We turned it down because my manager's like, no, I'm going to get a 6-year deal out of this. Because they know they want you. They just don't want to spend the money. It's a small network. They don't have the money. So they're just going to try to, you know, kind of bring you in.
That's a ballsy play, basis. Though. That's a ballsy move.
Yeah, it is. And I was like, really? It's like 2 episodes. Let's go. And I had a buddy. I had a buddy back in New York who turned down a huge film that turned out to be a huge career-making film for a major movie star who became a huge movie star to work with a very prestigious director. And he turned it down because he said, oh, they're not paying me enough. And I said, are you crazy? I said, take the film. That'll launch your entire career. And he never had much of a career after that.
I guess it worked for you, though. So they came back and said.
But I would go on my jogs and I'd think of him like, God, am I going to be that guy? What am I doing? I got to call my manager. I'd call her a few times and say, look, we need to take this.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to be that guy that you know, watch somebody else go on to fame and fortune. But so we said no. And then they came back with 4 episodes. And she goes, and she called me. She goes, they came back with 4 episodes. I got them. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Are you going to say no? She goes, you damn right I'm going to say no. I said, no, 4 episodes, please, let's do it. And she goes, I know what I'm doing. Let me do this. And to her credit, and it's really important to have great management, she called Gavin Pallone and she said, give the guy a deal. You know you want him. He was great. And he's going to be great in the pilot. The chemistry's there. Go get him the money. And he did.
Whoa.
So she called me, said, come to lunch. She had an envelope. I sat down, opened it. It was a 6-year deal.
Whoa.
It's a good lunch.
good story. Watch. Okay, so you kind of knew. All right, watch. I'm Luke.
Yeah. Yeah. I was shocked. Wow. It was a guest star role. It was like a one-off thing. I was shocked.
And this is before the pilot actually aired.
This is before everything aired. Yeah. I was shocked.
Well played, manager role. Lady.
Yeah. Yes.
Did you pay for lunch?
I don't think I think I forgot my wallet that day. No, she bought.
Oh my God.
Classy person. Great manager. All right, babe. We're going to take a little break now. We're going to come back with Macy Gray, the extraordinary Macy Gray. Well, we're back, everybody, with the illustrious superstar Grammy-winning very rare talent, and it's my privilege to introduce my audience to the one and only Macy Gray. Macy, how you doing today?
I'm good. You know, these Zoom things are so much pressure. You know, you got to put the background together. Yeah.
They're very, very complicated. You know, let me just ask you this. Were you aware when you wrote I Try, mm-hmm. were you aware how good that song was and the impact that it was going to have on music lovers and on your life?
No, I actually argued with the head of the label at the time was Polly Anthony, and I had a huge fight with her about releasing that song because I wanted to put out another song, and I didn't think I Try was, I thought the chorus was too wordy. I thought it had too many words in it and people right. remember.
Yeah, but what a great hook. I mean, it just grabs you. It's just so great. What a great song. And did you know that it was going to appear, the song was going to play on Gilmore Girls?
Absolutely not.
You didn't know. So the agent was just sort of licensing the song out to so many different sources, and that's just one place where it ended up.
Yeah, you know, they do me like that.
That's a good thing. That's great. So tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to LA and ended up signing a record deal. And I read a little bit about your story, and my God, it's so interesting that you signed with Atlantic, and your guy left and they let you go, and you went back home, came back to LA, and ran into Joe Solo and did those tracks and started getting a lot of gigs.
Well, it was I came out here when I was 17 to LA from I'm from Ohio, and I went to USC. That's what brought me out here, and then I had taken piano lessons since I was 7, so you know I always gravitated toward the musicians for some reason.
Right.
At school, and then long story short, I ended up in a jazz band, and then we started playing around town, like hotels, like the Ramada Inn. That was our biggest gig time. And then after school, I really got attached to being in the studios, and I loved being in bands. And then I was in a rock band. That's where Joe Solo came in. I was in a rock band with him, and we played all the strip. And we were doing the Roxy one night. We had the 6 o'clock slot at the Roxy. And on a Monday, I think, and there were 8 people there. And one of them was a guy named Tom Carolan, who had stopped in to see the band after us.
Right.
Because nobody goes to the Roxy at 6 o'clock. Right. So for some reason, he was there early. He saw us. He came up to me and he asked me if I would showcase for Atlantic. He was at Atlantic Records.
Wow.
And then I did a showcase, and then they signed me, and then I did an album with Atlantic, but I got pregnant, and then they dropped me. And then I think, I don't know. So then about two, three years went by, and then I got another deal at Epic, and that's the album, How Life Is. I made the album with Epic.
Wow. And are you still touring and still gigging here and in Europe?
Yeah, I'm obsessed with touring. This last 2020 was so devastating for me because I didn't get to go anywhere. And I didn't even feel like myself, you know. I didn't know what to do with myself when I wasn't like getting ready for a tour or coming home from a tour. And so
are you ramping up right now? Are you rehearsing and getting the band together and the songs together to go back out once COVID sort of subsides a little bit?
Yeah, we just are in the middle of finishing up a new album. I've actually made my band official. We're called Macy Gray and the California Jet Club. It's the same guys I've been with for about 5-6 years now, maybe.
Right. And Macy, tell us about this foundation that you've been working with that's so close to your heart.
Mm-hmm. So my good, we support families who have lost loved ones due to police violence. So we help with mental health services, funeral costs. I think a lot of people don't realize the aftermath. You know, you hear about those stories in the news and the protests, but you know, people don't get the full picture of what goes on after, which is people, you know, moms and dads that just never stop crying, never heal. So our biggest thing is mental health services.
Okay. Macy, great having you on. Great talking to you. The great Macy Gray, Grammy winning singer, you know her, you love her.
See ya. Bye-bye.
Okay, gang, that's it for episode one. Wasn't that fun and fantastic? And isn't this exciting? I hate that it's over, but you know what? Let me thank Macy Gray for joining us. We had a lot of fun with her. And Yannick Truesdale, the inevitable Yannick Truesdale, ladies and gentlemen. He's a kick in the pants, if there ever was one. So make sure you tune in to episode two. That's the next one. We've got some great guests coming up for that. Sally Struthers and Rose Abdu. So anyway, guys, do your homework for next episode, episode two with Sally Struthers and Rose Abdu. We're going to be recapping Lorelei's first day at Chilton. So go ahead and watch that episode and then tune in to the podcast. I am all in. I'm Scott Patterson. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget, follow us on Instagram at I Am All In Podcast and email us at gilmore@iheartradio.com. All you Gilmore fans, if you're looking for the best cup of coffee in the world, go to my website for my company, scottyp.com, scottyp.com, scottyp.com. Grade 1 specialty coffee.